chose the title Looking Back and Not Behind to do that. I was trying to explain the idea and the development of the word performativity, mainly in language theory, and then at the end you will see how this concept also opens up and helps to understand cultural practices in general and not only the practice of speaking. So I will try to show how the idea of performativity leads from analysis of language to cultural studies and maybe even further. So performativity, I think, is mainly a tool that can be useful concerning many different topics. What I mean by tools is that it works on or against something that is already there. It doesn't really stand on itself as a consistent theory or so. So language theory, like philosophy in general, was mostly interested in statements, like in declarations about the world, like this is life, this is the meaning of life. So both philosophy and linguistics mainly ask what questions, what is language? Because they believe in a fixed state of being that doesn't change anymore once you've revealed it. A state of being is something that can be referred to, pointed at because it lies outside of language in the world itself. For Platon, we can find the answer to those what questions if we look behind the changing appearance at its essence. So the essence is the stable entity that lies behind what we see. So we have to abstract from this appearance if we want to come close to the truth. So there's this division between a stable essence on the one side and the changing appearance on the other side. And this is the core of what is called metaphysics of presence. So you have this kind of two-world thought. And this thinking into world exists in many different versions, I think, throughout the history of thought. But what those versions have in common is that they distinguish between two ontologically different states. Traditionally, it distinguishes between the system of the language as a grammatical structure and its use, like in speaking, for example. The interesting thing for linguistics is to analyze the system and not the changing and therefore inferior use. With rituals. If in a wedding ceremony the priest says, "Hereby I pronounce you man and wife," then of course he doesn't refer it to something, but he turns the man and woman in front of him into a married couple. This kind of words that do what they say, Austin called performative. Performatives don't necessarily have to be rituals for Austin, but they are all based on conventions. What becomes clear in those examples is that in order to be successful, the context and the authorized subject, like the priest or the judge, is very important. So if we ask Austin where words get the power to transform or perform from, the answer is clear. The words of the priest have the power to transform to individuals in a couple because they are backed up with conventions. The success of the performative sentence, that it can do something, depends on the situation around. But only because the priest repeats a ritual formula, he can form. This means, though, that the transformation cannot be an internal analysis of words. He has to say exactly, it's like the priest in music normally has when he tries to look at words as entities. And it means that the effects of words don't only depend on the speaking subject, but on the situation and the ones that are addressed. Thinking about performativity is thinking about the relation between speakers and listeners. Speaking is doing, as often says, but doing is always directed to someone, towards a listener or an audience. The second thing the examples show is that performatives are not so much about right or wrong, like the statements. But if every word can be then performative, there's a problem that Austin gives us. And this is the problem of the context. How can we confine the context? So to understand this idea that every word can somehow be performative, I will move on to Jacques Derrida. Critical of this idea that the context is something external to the sign, something that we draw a line only through the context that the sign can have any meaning at all. He replaces utterance, like the sentence, by sign as structurally the same, so I will now talk more about the sign. A sign only has meaning in relation to other signs. It is meaningful not by itself, but through its difference from others. Together, those two assumptions mean that if a sign changes context, it will also change meaning. Meaning is not a stable entity within the sign, but it is made through the changing relations between the signs. Meaning for Derrida exists only in between. That's why it can never be absolutely present. Speaking, like writing, is always repetition, and therefore it is always referring to a non-present context. So to define the context of a speech act, like Austin wants to do it, is for Derrida impossible. Contexts are always open and unconfined. So where does the performative power of a speech act for Derrida come from? Comes exactly from this power I just described of every sign to break with one context and work with another one. The power of a sentence or a sign to act